It's been called a monumental novel, and it is literally a monument to an era, a great epoch of German and European history. Thomas Mann began it as a small novella, but it gradually grew into an investigation of themes which were to obsess Thomas Mann throughout his life. Now, Thomas Mann chose to set the novel deliberately in a Swiss sanatorium. And the idea behind that was that he would be able to look at a cast of characters who were every day having to confront the idea of death, and who were therefore forced to look at their own lives and the meaning of their own lives. And in doing so, he was able to weave themes which deeply concerned him. One of the most important of those was this idea of the split in German culture between, on the one hand, the values of Western democratic civilization, and on the other hand, the deeply Germanic, almost Wagnerian ideas of Kultur. Now, the scene between Hans Castorp and Madame Schoscha is highly comic. Up till now, we've seen Hans Castorp very much as the innocent, earnest, serious, typical young German from the lowlands, anxious to learn about life. With Madame Schoscha, we have a new element introduced, namely the erotic lady. And she is able, by teasing this young man, by deliberately asking him to come up to her room to look at her internal photograph, she is able to tease him into becoming a pawn for her ridicule. Well, after that night of instruction, let's call it, Madame Schoscha leaves the sanatorium, and her place is taken by a much more ominous character, and the tone of the book once again becomes more serious. In fact, Thomas Mann referred to the book as this very serious jest, and he wanted to counterpoint the two sides. Professor Nafta, the new character we meet, is a cynical, outrageously Machiavellian character, contemptuous of noble ideas of progress. He's a complete fatalist and realist. The arguments separating Settembrini and Nafta became, in the novel, a symbol for those arguments dividing intellectual life in Germany, and in fact in Europe, at that moment before the First World War. Thomas Mann felt that there must be a synthesis between these two different views of life, the rationalist view and the fatalist view. And he looked for it in one of the most powerful figures of 19th century German culture, Wagner and Nietzsche. Now, years before, Nietzsche had written a book called The Birth of Tragedy. And in that book, he had explored the contrast between two great Greek archetypes, the Apollonian, clear-thinking, classical, rationalist view of civilization, and on the other hand, the Dionysian view of civilization, lustful, voluptuous, elemental. And Nietzsche believed that it wasn't sufficient to have simply the noble, dignified, Apollonian approach. You also had to have an experience of its opposite, that dark, cruel world of Dionysus, in order to make it complete. And fusing those themes in a chapter called Snow, Hans Castorp, our hero, is given a revelation similar to Nietzsche's, whose book had in fact provided man not only with the central vision of his novel, but even with its title, The Magic Mountain. Now the Olympic Magic Mountain opens to our view and shows us its roots. The tragedy of the Magic Mountain reaches its climax as Hans Castorp, who's been the pawn in so many clashes of will and ideology, prepares to leave this sanatorium and join the ranks of uniformed German soldiers in the First World War. He's glad that after all that philosophizing and questioning, he can simply surrender himself to the larger, higher forces of history. Hans Castorp's education has been a failure. But out of that failure, Thomas Mann has made an epic book. Just as his novel Buddenbrooks had been a memorial to the German merchants of the 19th century, so the Magic Mountain is a monument to the cultural and historical crisis afflicting not only Germany, but Europe as well, before the First World War. For a while, Mann himself had been embittered by Germany's defeat in the First World War, and he had, in fact, welcomed Soviet-style communist revolution in Munich rather than the detested hypocrisies, as he saw them, of the Western Entente allies. But in time after the First World War, he became reconciled to Western ideas of humanism and democracy. The Magic Mountain therefore ends on a note of hope, that out of pain and suffering, the conflict between these ideas, a newer, wiser, more humane society will emerge. Sadly, it was an expectation in vain. Thomas Mann would become one of the first writers to be exiled from Nazi Germany. He was deprived of his German citizenship in 1936, and he'd spend the years of the Second World War in exile in America. The Magic Mountain was burned in Hitler's Germany, but elsewhere, it came to be acknowledged as one of the great novels of the 20th century. Its author, the spokesman of humanity and world peace, up to his death in 1955.